So good morning, everyone. My name is Stephanie.
Oops. Oh, stop.
Okay, let me do a sound check. Can everyone hear me? Or Kathy, can you make sure I'm heard?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Sorry. I was
admitting
somebody and the button switched and went to mute you instead of the name. Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. We're all
technical glitch there.
Almost a year in some ways, we're technological experts. In some ways, every day is the first day, which is a relevant comment to make, Groundhog Day having just passed. Anyway, so good morning. My name is Stephanie Cooper. I'm Deputy Commissioner at MassDEP. I am here substituting this morning for Commissioner Stuberg, who sends his apologies. He had an unavoidable schedule conflict come up. But I am glad to have the opportunity to be with you today. And I'm joined by a number of our staff, and I know I won't name everyone who's on the call, but Kathy Baskin, folks have seen, our Assistant Commissioner for Water Resources, is here, and Leldon Langley, who oversees our wastewater programs from the Boston office. And I know that John Murphy is here as well from the Wastewater Board. And we have a variety of staff from both Boston and our regions who work on wastewater issues. These forums continue to be really valuable and important for us, and we hope that the same is true for all of you. So we're glad to have the opportunity to come together monthly now. We do record these sessions, and we post the recordings afterwards so that people can access the information after the fact, and it's there as a record. I think, as people know, you know, our custom now is to take your questions, and as well as talking about them here on these calls, we do post written answers. And it's almost like a long scrolling document. I don't know how many pages long it is now, but I know that we've had some updates since last month that we're posting to. So that information is also available on our website. So I can see a couple questions coming in on the chat. There are some topics that I intended to address, but I think what I wanna do is let EPA give their report. And I should have recognized that Denny Dart and Jeff Koff are also with us. So I'm gonna turn to Denny, and then I will address some of the questions after that. So Denny, the floor is yours. I'll just make sure that
your
audio is
so
good.
Much.
Great.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Cooper. You can hear me, right? Can you hear me?
Yes,
yes,
okay.
Denny.
Okay. So first of all, thank you for those who are putting things in the chat. I will also mention a few additional items, and I will put those in the chat after I mention them, so no need to take notes. First of all, Region 6, which is the Dallas region of EPA, is going to be doing a training on February 24th on laboratory practice for POTWs. Region 6 actually runs the program in New Mexico, including running a lot of wastewater treatment plants. They actually have certified operators at that EPA office. So I'll put that in the chat. I also wanted to mention that each month we have a meeting with Centers for Disease Control, and I just wanted to share the report from the last meeting. For starters, we asked about safety related to wastewater treatment, and they said they are continuing to watch that closely, and they are not seeing any elevated COVID-19 risk due to working at wastewater treatment plants, though they advise continuing to use standard PPE. A couple of months ago, I talked about the CDC wastewater surveillance system that they're setting up for COVID-19. This was informed by the BioBot work, and now there's quite a bit of money that's being spent, and they're trying to roll out wastewater surveillance testing across the country. So on January 6th, CDC sent $19 billion to states for the first round of wastewater surveillance, covering 10% of the United States population. Massachusetts is not yet participating in the first round, but there is a second round that will start in March or April, where CDC hopes to expand to 50% of the population in all 50 states. And municipalities are allowed to apply for this. Any data that's collected goes into the HHS Protect system, and then it's published by CDC, and that's actually going to be available on a site that they've built out now. It's really quite extensive, and I'll put the link for that in the chat. They are also working on coming up with a way to identify the new variants, like the P1 variant from Brazil. They wouldn't think of wastewater as the first warning, but it could certainly be helpful in identifying whether those variants have hit a community. And then finally, I want to mention that CDC is doing a special webinar for the water sector on vaccinations, and I'll put the information about that in the chat. So that's what I have to offer today. Thank you.
Thank you, Denny. That's all really helpful. I'll just make one, a Massachusetts note related to the CDC effort that you spoke about. You know, we have stayed in touch with our colleagues at the Department of Public Health, and I think we've talked about on this call before that they are doing some wastewater surveillance, or they've contracted with CDM Smith to do that, and they've started a pilot collecting data in Revere. And they have told us that they are plugged into those conversations and meetings that the CDC is having, but that their data does not yet meet the criteria, or it's not robust enough to submit to the CDC's effort. But that is something that they very much want to do and hope that they will be able to do, so that that Massachusetts data could be submitted. And as you know, there may be partners on the call here who are also participating from the municipal level. So does that cover the EPA updates?
Yes, I believe so.
And I can okay, excellent. Thank you so much. And I could see, I can't follow it at all, but I could see some more links in the chat to various trainings too. So I think people should check the chat for more of those resources to follow up on what Denny was speaking about. And speaking of training, I would like to turn to John Murphy next. And I could see there was one question in the chat about upcoming operator trainings. And I'm hoping that John can give us the latest from that front.
Yep. Thanks, Stephanie. Just some quick updates from the board. Next board meeting is scheduled for February 17th. So any applications that have been submitted will be processed then. We are in a renewal year, with the certification period ending December 31st, 2021. So the 20 TCHs will be needed by then. With that being said, NUIPIC's MWAT program has just been unveiled, I guess. So you can sign up now for exam prep courses on their website. NUIPIC also collaborates with the Mass Water Environment Association. Their March quarterly meeting is gonna cover PFAS issues. So check the NUIPIC website for those classes. That calendar has been updated. NUIPIC's enrolled 40 courses available online. The New England Water Environment Association, last day of their annual conference is Thursday of this week. So there's a lot of available online training available. Exam prep courses are out for the spring. So if anyone is running into any exam issues, I have heard of a few glitches at exam sites, please reach out to me, because I've been reaching out to ABC and the exam sites just for clarification. So if anyone does run into any exam issues, please notify the board. Other than that, thank you for your time.
That's really helpful, John. And I would underscore your last comment. We absolutely want to know if people are having problems accessing the exams and accessing the content. We appreciate that it's an extra step to be doing all this work online. So please let John know if you're having problems, and we'll do our best to resolve them in a timely way. So I have just a couple things. Oh, I can see someone has their hand raised. Mr. Branton, did you have a question?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Just viewing the chat's postings.
Oh, okay, great. Your box is right under me, so you got my attention very quickly when I saw your virtual hand shoot up. Okay, so there are a couple things I wanted to cover, and then we'll open it up to questions, and we'll make sure that we're addressing what people are raising in the chat too. So one thing that we talked about last week that I suspect is pretty high on your minds and high on your agenda is the topic of rate relief and federal funding. And I know the commissioner talked about in last month's call the fact that Congress has passed two pieces of legislation that are relevant, the COVID Relief Act and the Consolidated Appropriations Act, that both of which contain different aspects of relief to water and wastewater ratepayers. And we're still learning about exactly how this is going to be administered, but I'll just, you know, kind of go over the basics of it to make sure people have that information. You know, the COVID Relief Act does include funding for renters who are having trouble meeting, paying their utility bills and meeting those obligations. And the Consolidated Appropriations Act includes $638 million to forgive overdue water and sewer bills. And that's targeted, obviously, toward low-income households. And, you know, the legislation states that it's going to be deployed through the federal Department of Health and Human Services, you know, funneling funding to states and to tribes, which will then distribute the funding to utilities. And then, you know, you, the utilities would have the option of how you do that, how you administer, whether you reduce bills that are in arrears or you reduce rates. As I understand it, there will be some flexibility there. That being said, we have not heard exactly how this funding is going to be distributed or that it's here, I would say. We understand that we'll follow the LIHEAP program, the Low Income Heat Energy Assistance Program, and that's administered, people may know, by our Massachusetts Department of Housing and Community Development. So we're staying on top of it, and we're, you know, trying to have our finger on the pulse of what's going to move next and what the next steps are. But we don't have, you know, that information today. But we just want you to know that that's out there. We think that that ultimately will be quite helpful, and we hope to have more information for you on it soon. And if we have information between now and next month, obviously we will get it out through Mickey Nowak and through the other partners who are with us today. The other really hot topic I know on people's minds is, of course, the vaccine. And phase two of the vaccine rollout started February 1st, as we know, and it's a lot of information on the news. You know, I'm seeing a lot of footage from Fenway Park and Gillette Stadium and snow clearing to make sure that vaccine sites can stay open. And it's obviously a very active logistical operation. We know that people 75 and older are the first eligible. But then, you know, February and March is the time for phase two. And we know that under essential workers, there's a specific category for water and wastewater utilities. And I think that is in part credit to all of the good work and advocacy that you have done and that we have done together. And we do want you to know that the Department of Public Health very much has this sector on their radar. You know, I know that, you know, you could sort of go through the who, what, when, where, why, and how. I think those are the probably categories of questions that people have. But we want you to know that we've been in touch with DPH. We know that some others have too. And if people want to add to my comments afterwards, you can feel free to, if you've had your own connections or have your own information to supplement. But we've been in touch with DPH, and you know, we've let them know that we stand ready to help in any way to support the vaccination of, you know, all water utility employees. We also, given DEP's mission, are being asked to help with solid waste and recycling sectors and partners. So, you know, we're consistently advocating on your behalf. DPH is, you know, it's pretty clear they're in the throes of this, but they're trying to think ahead to, you know, the next group, which includes all of you. So we hope that we will have more information in the coming days. I know there are questions like, what's the universe of people who can get vaccinated? Is it everybody? Is it, you know, not just operators, but all staff? You know, what kind of credentials do you need to have? Can you have a letter from your employer, or do you need to have, you know, a badge or a license or something else? You know, where can you go? Do you just go to a regular vaccination site, or will there be dedicated sites for the sector? So, you know, recognize that those are all important questions that people have. And I do hope that we will have more information, and the DPH will have more information to share with you in the coming days. And certainly as you have specific questions and concerns, we hope that you'll continue to share them with us, and we will amplify them to DPH on your behalf. And so I will pause there just to see if anybody else has any comments or information about the vaccine that they want to share. And then I'll hit one other quick topic before we open it up.
Steve, yes.
Go ahead, Steve Rohde from MWRA.
Yeah, so I just wanted to talk about, and people may have seen in the Boston Business Journal yesterday, there was an article about outreach that the command center is doing to businesses to try to encourage them to hold vaccination clinics. We have been working on that. We, you know, MWRA annually has vaccination clinics for our employees. We typically get about 500 people who participate. We ran a poll amongst our employees with regards to the COVID vaccine, and it seems like probably a higher number, on the order of 700 to 800 people have said they are definitely interested. Unfortunately, the provider that we normally use for our flu clinics does not appear to be interested in doing COVID clinics. And so we're, you know, at this point, we're pretty much in the market for someone to partner with in order to provide those clinics. And so that's pretty much where we stand at this point. And if anybody's aware of providers out there that would be interested in partnering with the water and wastewater utility, MWRA is interested. I'll stop there.
No, that's really helpful, Steve. And clearly MWRA being such a large organization has the infrastructure in place. In other words, as you said, you do the regular flu and other vaccination clinics. So it does, you know, that's something that will hopefully become clearer in the coming days, whether, you know, is it really practical to host vaccination sites, you know, at utilities? As you noted, you have to have the clinical partner or the, you know, the medical entity that's administering the vaccines. And then, you know, as we've seen sort of on the news and read about, then you have to have, you know, the right type of spacing to allow people to wait the 15 minutes and be monitored. So it's just a little bit more complicated than your typical flu vaccine. But I think that's something too that we can be raising to DPH and the, you know, Steve talked about the command center. We're DPH staffs the command center, and in our case, our direct contact now is with the Department of Public Health. But we can raise that too. So there may be at some point, if it does go in the direction of having those specific vaccination sites, sort of a matchmaking process to make sure that there's, yes, the right space and the right sort of operational layout, but then also having the clinical partner. So there's a lot there to be figured out, but I know that people are really focusing on it. And so I'm hopeful that there will be some good clarity and ultimately, you know, a clear path ahead for all of you to get vaccinated in the coming weeks. The last thing I just wanted to mention was the CSO legislation, which is actually now law that the governor signed over the holidays and requires when there are both sanitary sewer overflows and CSO overflows for utilities to post notifications. So both at the site and then online and to do that in a very quick time period. So within 2 hours. And the law has some other more detailed components about providing information. And it charges DEP with a lot of responsibility, including promulgating regulations to set out this program. It does give the commissioner some latitude to set up a process for potential exemptions from some of the requirements. DEP is charged with compiling an annual report that details all of the instances of CSOs and SSOs. So we want you to know that we are taking a very hard look at the law and figuring out an implementation plan. And we have sort of a landing page or in our existing content on our webpage for CSOs, we have some information about the bill and some brief content. And we want all of you to know that we're working hard on the details in anticipation of convening a stakeholder process. So being able to interact with all of you and other interested parties as we develop regulations that would of course then go through a public process. The law needs to be in, or the all the requirements need to be implemented 18 months from the signing date that was just a few weeks ago. And our regulations need to be final within a year. So it is something that we're going to be working on. We're going to be moving pretty quickly. So we'll have more to say about that, but we wanted you to know, make sure that, I'm sure people are aware of the law, but wanted you to know that it's something that DEP is working on in-house, and soon we'll be, you know, talking more externally about it. So I think with that, Kathy, like I said, I'm not that good at the multitask of speaking and looking at the chat. So I'm not sure we've covered everything that people are asking, but if there are questions there, or if we want to just open the floor.
Thanks, Stephanie. I think you've actually answered a lot of questions that were in the chat as you were discussing different issues. So we had a question from Mickey Nowak about what training is available. And there have been a lot, there's been a lot of postings in the chat from EPA and others about training that's coming up. We did have a question about what DP is doing in terms of advocating for the drinking water and wastewater sectors at DPH around vaccines. And I think you covered that. There was a question about the timeline for regulations on the CSO notification law, and you went through that. I don't see any other questions that have been unanswered. I hope I didn't miss any, because we have a pretty lengthy chat today.
Okay.
So I don't know if people want to unmute, or if I did miss the question, I really apologize, and please just repost it. I think I've seen everything here.
Okay. So if you don't think your question was answered from the chat, please unmute yourself and let us know. And of course, my junior partner joins me at the most inopportune times. And if you have other questions that you'd like to raise now, please feel free. I'll let people go ahead and unmute themselves if they have something they'd like to add.
Yes, I have a question about the stakeholder meeting on that H4921. Do you have a timeline for that? And who would be the stakeholders?
Yeah, so I think, so we have to have the regulations promulgated within a year, and it typically can take, up to 9 months for the whole process to put out draft regulations, go through the hearing and comment period and then respond to those and finalize. So we are looking at convening the stakeholders, quickly within the next couple of months. And certainly the stakeholders would include, representatives of the wastewater utilities, absolutely. There are a lot of environmental advocates who, push for this law. And I know that some of you actually worked with them or have had discussions with them about it in the past. So I think we would anticipate the environmental community, perhaps some other municipal interests, watershed advocates. I would put them within the category of environmental advocates. So I think as we always do, we would try to have, representation from the different points of view or the different interests in this law. But I would underscore that it's always really important to hear from whoever the regulated community is. And in this instance, it's wastewater utilities. So that will be an important part of the discussion. So I think we should have more information in the next few weeks about the schedule and how we're going to convene this. And I don't know, Kathy or Lelton, if you want to add anything, please feel free.
No, I think you covered it. So, there will be a lot of outreach and stakeholder engagement, especially in the first half of the year, as we're developing the regulations, the draft regulations. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy, intense time on that front.
Hey.
And Josh Schimmel.
Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
Hi, Josh. Good.
There's only 19 CSO communities, so could we just make sure that at least those 19 CSO communities that are notified and have the ability to be stakeholders at the table?
I think that's reasonable. We can talk about that, but I think that's reasonable. You should have a voice.
Okay.
We're definitely talking about how to engage all 19, whether it be, it may not be at a stakeholder committee where, we then have another 19 other people, but we want to hear from all 19. We want to hear from the environmental side too.
I have a comment there. From my reading of the bill,
Can you just identify yourself? We can't.
Mickey Nowak.
Oh, Mickey, hi, I thought it was you.
Okay. Yes, okay. From my reading of that bill, and I could be wrong, it's very confusing. It seems like it could involve more than the CSO communities. Comment if that's correct. It seems to me that any discharge from the collection system into the waters of the Commonwealth would be covered by that. And that could be out of a pump station that's not a CSO.
So we are looking at that, and it does not limit the discharge to CSO. It says including combined sewer overflows. So we are aware of that, and we are looking at that to see what that means exactly.
What exactly is the scope?
Yeah, right. So I just want to make sure that wastewater facilities are aware of this, that, you know, because it's online as a CSO bill, but it's really, to me, more expansive than that.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, that's a fair point. And I think in addition to, you know, outreach and convening the stakeholder committee, we will have more to say on next month's call. So we can also plan to just have a more detailed presentation on this. So we'll be in touch with people in the meantime, but I think that would probably be helpful. And that would be a way of at least framing, you know, the department's sort of legal reading of the law. Here's who it could impact. I think that could be helpful. So we can do that.
I think that's great because I think, as Mickey said, I think when this was making the rounds, we provided a lot of comments on narrowing it down to CSOs, and it's a much larger group than 19 CSO communities the way we interpret it now. But when you guys establish that framework, I think it'd be helpful because then you'll really know who the affected parties are.
Right, who's affected and exactly how, or closer to exactly how? Yes. And I can see that Carla Sangre has their hand up.
Yeah, hi, Stephanie. There's just two comments I wanted to make. And one of them is, everyone knows that words are so important. And I'm not calling it out, but you just said we need to hear from the environmental community. And I cannot let that stand. We are the environmental community. And it's so important what words DEP uses when they refer to the municipalities and the people doing the environmental work. We are the environmental community. So you gotta figure out a different way to call us out, because the way that comes out is there's the environmental community and there's a polluting community or something like that. And I just have to advocate for all my professionals that work with me that we are the environmental community. And the other thing I wanted to add was, to Mickey's point, there may be other entities beyond the CSOs communities that are covered because of the wording that was on the final legislation. My plant is an example of that, where I might have to report a blend when there is no permit violation. So what am I reporting?
Okay, so to your first point, that's your right to call me out, because you all are in the business of delivering environmental protection every single day. That's what you do. And so, you know, you're not just practitioners, you're actually delivering that service and protecting the environment every day. So I think we sometimes, you know, you just sort of fall back on nomenclature. When I said environmental groups, I meant the nonprofit community, you know, the advocacy community versus what I would call frontline environmental protection organizations, which is all of you. So you're right to call us out on that, Carla. And it is important how this is framed, because it's absolutely not a dichotomy. You know, it should never be seen as, oh, these are, you know, you all are cast as the polluters, because that's not the case. That's not the case. So that's, you're right to say that. And that's, we'll take that very much to heart in the way we frame this publicly, and the way we convene a stakeholder table, if you will. So I appreciate what you had to say there. And then your second piece about understanding, you know, what exactly are the requirements for you? Yes, also hear you loud and clear. And I don't want to opine until we've really finished our work and our lawyers have helped us really figure out, you know, what's the framing of this, who has, what are the requirements for specific entities, and when do they have to report, and in what instances? So I just want to, I want to wait till we are totally clear on that. But I do appreciate that that's most important information for you to know, and for everybody in this community to understand. So we will have more details on that next month, but also be in touch with people in between.
If I may chime in.
Sure.
Thank you for both those comments and answers. I also wanted to thank that, you know, during events like that, we've always had the support of our DEP and EPA regional coordinators. If questions ever come up, we always just reach out and ask them, you know, if there's ever a question of what should or shouldn't be included in the report, they've always been more than helpful in explaining what data they're looking for and how to report that. So thank you to our coordinators, and hopefully we'll all have current Zoom subscriptions for this year as we reach out with all of our questions.
Absolutely. You know, technical assistance, and I won't speak for EPA, except that I think I can echo their continued commitment to be a strong partner in this area. And we know that, you know, for DEP, yes, you got to figure out, you know, what does the law say? How are we going to regulate? What are the requirements? But then it's, how do we all work together to fulfill those requirements, you know, in a way that's practical, and you have to be ready, you know, in the middle, at a moment's notice during these events to provide that support. So we will be. And we appreciate the, you know, the obligation that this puts on all of you. All right, is there anybody else? Kathy, can you see? I don't see any other hands, but I can't see everybody.
There are no other hands raised, and I do not see any other questions in the chat yet. So,
okay, we can give it another moment. And I'll just note that our next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, March 3rd at 9 a.m. And we'll obviously send out reminders in advance of that, but just to remind people of the calendar while we're together. Okay, so it sounds like we've been able to hear from all the voices who want to speak up today. So I want to thank you for tuning in with us. Thank you for all that you do in, you know, this 11th month of the pandemic, you know, with snowstorms and, you know, it seems like everything else that nature and the world can throw at us. We're dealing with, and we recognize that you all are dealing with it in a very acute frontline way. So we want to thank you for everything that you do. Wish you, you know, safe travels and safe times in the weeks ahead. And we will be in touch on all these issues and see you all again on March 3rd, if not before.
Okay, thank you.
So March 3rd, Wednesday, March 3rd at 9 a.m. is the next meeting. And Kathy with Mickey will be sending out reminders before that, so everybody knows and has the information. All right, everybody take care and have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.